Right.
But instead of this y and then two dots and then all this stuff, why not just have n underscore number q times x underscore tensor?
So you're saying n underscore
number q times t underscore tensor plus c underscore goes to, so tensor with that in the middle opens. No, that's c can be whatever.
Plus c.
Yes.
And then use this recursively.
Yes. So let's just say the tensor of x with many underscores, comma this,
yeah,
comma y with many underscores goes to and both the tensor.
Yeah, this can work. There's a slightly annoying thing about it, which is that sometimes you may get these warnings about recursion level exceeded. But of course, if you increase that, so this can only work for things which have length, I don't know, less than 256 or something like that. Yeah. So, but it works.
How many loops? 158 loops?
Well, I don't know. I don't know how it scales with transcendentality, so maybe this is all you need in this case. Okay. Okay. So far I defined pretty much everything I need for this shuffle, except that I'd like to be able to compute shuffle products of several, you know, not just two arguments, but several arguments. And of course, we know that oh, sorry. Thank you. Okay, so let's do shuffle products of several arguments, and we're going to do this recursively. So we have and then we can have a list of objects with head tensor, a sequence, actually. So again, I use a repeated symbol there. Now, so the way I define shuffle so far, it just takes two arguments. This is the definition.
Right.
And
but the line after that has three arguments, right? So what is the second argument supposed to be?
This one? Yeah, so this one, I could have written it to have just two. You see, this can be empty. The first argument can be empty, and then it's a two-argument function. And then the last argument can also be empty, and then it's again a two-argument function. I could have written it as two different lines where I write these two cases, but I can just write it in one single line if I do this. So here, this is very easy now. I can just do the shuffle of A with the shuffle of B and C. So the way it works is, because this is associative, I can compute this first, and then shuffle the result with the first argument. And of course, if C has more than one argument, then it's going to go again and shuffle the second argument with the first of the well, with the rest, and then go all the way until there's nothing left. And of course, here it's important that we have defined these functions where which are important for this to stop, for the recursion to stop. Okay.
Sorry, I didn't understand the last line. You have three slots?
I have three slots, but the last slot here can be an arbitrary length sequence of such objects.
So I'm saying that now shuffle is now available, able to take more than two slots. That's the goal of the slot.
Yes. So, I mean, it's going to get long, but let's try something.
But why not just C underscore? And then you put, why not C with two underscores? With three underscores.
So you want to do this? I guess this may work. I haven't tried that, so let's see.
Or even just see with single underscore.
A single one, well, I may need it for four.
So
let's see. For some reason, this doesn't expand everything.
Can you try the other one?
I don't think this is the problem. So I had let me try to. See if this fixes it. Doesn't.
But with this one identity, there are lots of bugs that you might need to run first the attributes and only then the definitions.
Okay, so that fixed it.
But try just with C, B.
Okay. Okay, so we're almost ready. Sorry? If I change the attributes of shuffle, flat. Maybe. Maybe. I'm afraid to try it now. yeah, that's something to. Put a comment here. So I'm not going to attempt that now, but it's maybe a good idea. Okay, so now that we have shuffle, we can compute symbol of products. And the way this is done, so I have P, I can make it a list. So this is going to be the list of the terms inside the product. And then I can compute the symbol of each one of them. And then this is going to be a list of symbols. And then I can shuffle them. And here there's another case we need to deal with is the case of powers. So we may have a function to some power. That means we're going to have to shuffle all the. So we're going to have here n arguments. X appears n times inside the shuffle. So we can do. We can use constant array as before, or we can do something like this. Very slow. Okay, now we need to build a function to expand tensor products. So what this means is that we need to look at every term, we need to factor it, and then we need to distribute this function tensor over the products. So we have an expression here to expand. So first of all, we take the expression and then what we do is we factor every single term, every single argument of this tensor. So for that, we apply the function factor to the arguments. And then this is a list now in the right-hand side here, so we just transform it into tensor. So this replacement rule here just takes an object with head tensor and some arguments, and then factors all of the arguments.
Why not, like,
maybe you can even, that's what I was about to say, maybe you can even do it like this. Let's try something. Let's experiment. Doesn't work this way.
No, but factor F slash F. In the line of the example, yes.
Oh, sorry, I should have said expand here. Let's try this way. Okay, this is great. Now, I'm not done, so this step here is just factoring the terms. Now I need to distribute over them. And to do that, I apply another rule. Which uses this function distribute. And this is a very versatile function, but I don't think I have time to explain in too much detail. What this means, we can try an example here. So this is exactly what we need. But here there's, again, another case, which is case of powers. So with powers, we have to deal separately. So this is the expansion. Now, another useful function is a function to put the, actually this is a rule here, the way I've written it, to put the arguments of the tensor in a canonical form. So remember that if I multiply one of these arguments by a number, then that doesn't change anything. So it may happen that I have objects like this, and of course this has to be the same as something like this. Right, so I need to write a function to deal with this. And the way I do it is to take each argument and it's negative, and then sort them somehow and pick one of them. So this is going to be a replacement rule. So we have this list L of arguments, and we have to apply a function. So I take the argument or minus the argument, and I need to sort them. Here I use the function sort by, which allows me to just pick a function to order them by. And what I chose is byte count. You can choose something else if you want.
Sort?
You can sometimes sort. If you have minus and if you have, it doesn't do it consistently. It depends on the names of the variables. If you have minus, yeah. So it sorts them alphabetically. So if you have a variable named Z, it's going to be treated differently than a variable named A. If you just sort them, it's kind of an annoying. Yeah. So I'm sorting them. You can just, I don't know if there's a best choice here. So I sort them. I take the first argument. So I'm applying this function on the list. And I can apply it to tensor L. Yeah, well, in that case, I don't know, it just orders them some. All I care is to have something.
If it was x minus y, the minus x minus y is y minus x, so byte count is the same.
Okay, so what other function should I choose here?
Just sort.
Just sort? Okay. Okay, so this is just my replacement rule. Okay. So let me try, how much time do I have left? 25 minutes. So now I'm going to try to compute, to write a function to compute the symbols of this Goncharov-Poy logs. I don't think I didn't discuss them in my lecture, but you have the definition there on the blackboard. So there are some iterated integrals, and the symbol is computed recursively by using the differential of G, whose expression I wrote on the blackboard. And there's a slight subtlety there, which is that sometimes two neighboring arguments can have the same value. And when that happens, the right result is obtained by just what you would get if you expanded all the D logs. I didn't write them in an expanded form there because it would be too long. But suppose here I had A1 equals A2. So then that, if I treat this naively, it would mean just forget about this whole term. It's going to be D log of 0. Well, that's a constant. It's 0 because log of 0 is infinity, but the right thing to do is just expand this and forget about only the term which is zero. Okay. So we want to write a function which computes the symbol of such a function, and so we need to prepare some lists with these differences. And let's look at the numerators. So the numerators are z minus a1, a1 minus a2, and so on. So this function here, it's useful once in a while. It just takes most of the elements of the list except the last one. The last one is not, it's just dropped. So let's do this with an example. So let's compute this difference. So this is what we need. You have z minus a1. If you look at the numerators, z minus a1, a1 minus a2, and finally an minus 1 minus an. So this is something we're going to have to use here. Some point. And now what we need to do is to write a function to map it over this, and that function has to fill the last slot of the symbol with all of these entries and then compute the symbol of this G's, but with some elements dropped. And that's it. And then sum over, this is going to be a list, and then replace that with a plus to make it a sum. Okay. So the function that's really very useful here is a function map indexed. So this function takes two arguments. The first argument is the element of the list, and the second argument is the position in the list. And why do we need position? The position we need because we need to know we're going to have to drop some of the arguments in the list of arguments of G, as you can see on the blackboard. So what we have is function here, symbol of, and here there's what I need to put in here is with fewer arguments, and then finally I need to put the Yeah, I give an example here. It just drops the last entry of the list. Yes. Okay. So here I need to put in here the G with some of the elements dropped. Okay, so that's going to be where I'm going to build a sequence. Okay, so I need to delete from the list of A's these arguments A, and I need to delete the term at the position, which is exactly the same position as the position of the argument on which I apply the function. This is what map index does. And then this is a list. So I need to do sequence. And then G of okay, where that's supposed to end here. Okay, and it doesn't. So I forgot this one. Okay, so let's see. Okay, this is it. Good, but this is just the first part.
Yeah,
so
can I check it on some example to understand it? Or
what example do you propose?
Symbol of G of A1, A2, comma Z.
Symbol of G.
A1, comma A2, comma Z.
Okay, now this is probably going to end bad because I didn't do the... I have to do the beginning case, so this is doing things recursively, but I didn't specify the endpoint of the recursion. So, I think it looks good so far. So far, so good. Now, this is a list, so I need to apply plus. And now I need to deal with the denominators. And the denominators are pretty much the same, except that this piece here is going to be different. And maybe I should just give the answer here. So that's going to be, and then I'm going to try to explain it. Okay, so what does this do? So I have the list of A's. By the way, here I didn't emphasize, but if you have two lists of the same length, you can just take the difference, and it's just going to do it term by term. Okay, so what is this? So I have the list of A's. Then I take the list of A's and I rotate it left. So what this does is pretty much what you expect. Right, so this just gets rotated left. And then I replace the last entry by zero. You see that the last denominator is by itself. Okay, so this is the symbol of Goncharov polylogs. Let's see if it works.
What
does it replaces the last. It replaces the last entry of this rotated list by zero.
You can see the last log there, there is just an, not an. It's an minus zero.
Okay, so I think I also need to give the case of so let's try some example. So this thing here is just the beginning of the recursion, or the end of the recursion, if you wish. Okay, so this looks good. How much longer should I?
We have like 7 minutes.
7 minutes, okay. So, and the last ingredient I need before I can go on to discuss the remainder function and compute the symbol is harmonic polylogs. So you have, again, I'm going to follow the same strategy. I'm going to use a recursion to compute its symbol, and this time it's much simpler. And you have the differential on the blackboard.
May I make a suggestion? I don't know if we're going to use too much entropy in the presentation.
Okay.
But I think now it's more or less clear that these symbols can be defined recursively. I think it would be fun to see if you could show at work the final code showing us how to simplify this.
Okay, so let me just type this quickly here. And I'm going to let you figure out what it does. I'm actually going to have a notebook with all this stuff so you can run it yourselves. To give it a name. It's 1 over 1 minus x, yes. So what would happen here is that there would be a sign, there would be a sign, and the reason I write it like this is because otherwise I would have to introduce something here in front to deal with that sign, and I prefer to write it more uniformly and deal with the sign later. There was a question about this one over here. Okay, so if A is 1, then I have this. Right? If A is 0, then I have this. And if A is minus 1, then that's what switch does.
That's exactly what's written in the bottom of the blackboard, right?
Yes.
So what
the integral of
that? No, I think the confusion was W, that function F naught, FA, which is there.
Yeah, this is not F. This is not. This is. You should look at the last line on the blackboard. Okay, so now I'm done. So I can input the expression for the remainder function. So I'm going to give it a name. It's a 937 term monster. If you just want to look at one of the terms, let's look at the last one. You have something like this. So the first thing I'm going to do here is just get rid of all the pi's and zetas. Just set them to 0. Because we said that we can't deal with them, so we're going to deal with them later. Okay. So this is slightly better. And now I need to use this to replace, so this expression here uses some calligraphic versions of the contour of Poillogs and harmonic Poillogs. So I'm going to have to replace those. And let me just paste that in here. Okay, and okay, so then what I have, the arguments of this remainder function are that kind of objects. So we have 3 cross ratios, and then these other auxiliary quantities, U plus minus V plus minus JKL. So, obviously, this object satisfies some complicated identities. So, I'm just going to paste here some substitution rules that deal with some of those identities. I don't have time to explain this, and it's not very illuminating. And this more substitution rules. So now what I'm doing now, I'm just simplifying. I'm just trying to reduce some of these to use some of these identities to rewrite things in terms of simpler products.
How does this seem
Okay. Let's see. So it's bigger. It got bigger.
Can you take the first 5 elements?
Okay, now this is wrong. I thought I defined this. Ah, for some reason, I think I forgot to execute one of the here. Okay, let's see now. Ah, good. So let's see. Okay, this is much better. Let's see. It's still bigger than we started with. Okay, so.
But it doesn't seem to have distributed.
Not yet. Not yet.
Because you didn't apply expand.
I didn't apply expand. So let's expand it and use some of these identities. Now, I don't know how long this is going to take. It's going to take, I guess, maybe a minute. I don't have any good jokes to tell you. Yeah, so there's not much left here. So this line, what it does is checks that, can I make this bigger? It checks that there are no V's left after dealing with expanding and using these relations that the V's satisfy. Now, maybe I should, while we're waiting here, I should tell you about the U's. So the story is that we're going to manage to eliminate the V's by just using these algebraic identities, but not the U's. And for the U's, we have some, we can write them using some different coordinates. When I say the U's, I mean the U plus minus. So you notice there's a square root in there. And actually, that writing over there, which is the way it appeared in the paper which computed this result, is kind of misleading because there's really just one object under square root. They're all equal. If you compute U1, 2, 3, 2, 3, 1, 3, 1, 2, you're going to notice that it's exactly the same thing. And it turns out that, okay, this finished. Okay, so this is what we started with. And then now it starts going down. This part here is just what I wrote on the blackboard, where delta is that square root, which is just one such square root. And then we can use this rewriting of the U's in terms of 6. So we have the cross ratios, which are the three variables on which this function depends at 6 points. And we can write them in terms of some other variables, z. Okay. And delta, which is the square root of that on the first line, turns out to be a perfect square when we use these coordinates. So I just wrote here what it is. It's kind of a complicated object. And actually, the sign is not important because the part with plus and minus appears symmetrically. If you look here, so whatever sign I pick for this delta, it's not going to make any difference in the end. I just pick one at random. And you see now that this u plus minus in this these new variables are kind of nice. You know, it's really just cross ratios like any other cross ratios. Before they looked pretty scary. Okay, so I'm not going to execute this line here because it takes about 3 minutes. But I have the result prepared for you, and the last thing I want to do is to compute a projection. What does this mean? Okay, this is the result. Just ignore this warning. Okay, so there's a conjecture by Goncharov that so we have a symbol now, which is a combination of objects of length 4. So the conjecture is that if we apply the following operation to this object, the operation is anti-symmetrizing the first two entries, anti-symmetrize in the last two entries, and then anti-symmetrize in the pairs, the pair of first two indices and the pair of last two indices. If you do that and you get zero, then everything is expressible in terms of classical polylogs.
I think we should finish.
Yes, so this is really quick now. This is the last thing. No, this is a very general conjecture. So you have a transcendentality 4 object. If you anti-symmetrize in the first two, anti-symmetrize in the last two, and anti-symmetrize in the pairs, the first two and the last two, if you get zero, then it's classical polylogs. And you see it's zero. So I think I'm going to stop here.